welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Hi Carl, welcome back to Soccer Coaching Podcast. How are you?
Hi Scott, yeah, really well. Thanks pal. Thanks for inviting me back on again.
Oh, it's good to see you. Yeah, very good. My end as well. Thank you very much. It's good to see you again. We were talking very briefly before. I can't believe the last time we spoke was nearly 2 years ago.
Yeah, so it's unbelievable. Time absolutely flies by, mate. So yeah, really surprised as well when I looked to see when I last spoke. Obviously, it was October 2020. So yeah, good to get back on though.
Well, it was different times as well, right? Because that was obviously, you know, things had changed a bit then, which maybe we'll mention or not, but you know, things were definitely a bit different then. But you were doing some great work back then, and we'll talk about what we spoke about then in a little while. But it'd be great to have a catch up and see how things are going. We'll talk about things you've done since then, and obviously the new book that you've got out as well, which we'll get onto in due course. But for those that maybe didn't listen to the episode previously, shame on them if they didn't, but you know, maybe some missed it. Do you mind just a, you know, brief update about kind of, you know, your background, your journey, and what it is you currently do?
Yeah, absolutely. Currently, my main role is with a university called UCFB, which we deliver football-specific degrees and master degrees. So that might be finance, football finance, or it might be marketing within the football industry and so forth. But a particular part that I look after is the football coaching management course. So that's run at the Etihad campus and the Wembley campus that we have. So I look after the Etihad campus up in Manchester. So I think it's about 5 years I've been there now. So that's my main role. And then alongside that, I'm also a FA coach developer, as we're called now. So been doing that now for about 5-6 years. So previously that was looking after the, or delivering on the FA level one and FA level two courses. They've all changed recently in the last year or so. So I just deliver on the UEFA C courses now, which replaced the old level two courses. And then alongside that, I'm also at Chester Football Club. So I look after the junior program. I think we'll touch upon that a little bit more detail as we go throughout the chat, pal. So I won't go into too much at the moment regards that. So in terms of beforehand, how I've got there, started coaching around about, probably about, I'm trying to think now. You always use me lad's age as how we look at it. So yeah. About 18 years now, because I started off when he went into grassroots football and just helped out, as a lot of people do, just help the local grassroots club out with a bit of coaching. Just got the bug, enjoyed it, and just progressed a little bit in terms of qualifications and getting experience. And then eventually just thought I'd try and get a bit of a career out of it. So quit my job, went back to university, got a degree, managed luckily to get into a job in a college, an FE college, and did some teaching there for around about 5 years. And then from there, moved on to the lecturing at the university. And then alongside that, I just got as much experience as I could coaching. So I started off, did a lot of work in the girls' programmes. So I started off at Crewe in their girls' programme, went and did a couple of years at Stoke City with them. And then just before my role at Chester, I was at Manchester City for about 5 years, where I did some coaching and also took on a role of the foundation phase lead at Man City as well. So that was a really good time. Did some work for Manchester United in their football schools and so forth. And then, like I say, also managed to get a role at the FA. So quite varied in terms of what I've done. Just I like to do little different bits and so forth. That's why I don't like just having the one role. I like to try and get out and do a few different things. I think it just helps you with the other roles as well. So the stuff at Chess and the stuff at the FA feeds into what I do at UCFB as well. And then finally, alongside that, just started getting into writing books. So I had my first book published last year, and my second one's literally just come out a few weeks ago. So that's me in a nutshell, hopefully.
That's a great summary. Brilliant, Carl. Well, a couple of quick questions, that's okay. When we spoke last time, I don't live too far from Wembley, so I'm aware of the campus that's closer to us. Obviously, not the one near Tip, but the one nearer to us. How's the courses going? I can imagine there's good demand for the programmes, but have you found that? And is it increasing over the last couple of years since we spoke last time?
Yeah, obviously, we had a little bit of the issue like everyone else did with COVID and so forth. Obviously, especially our degree, it's very practical based. So that obviously had an impact on students' journey during the course and how it impacted them as coaches and so forth. So we had that challenge, but it's increasing. The university is increasing massively in terms of numbers each year. So we're increasing the amount of courses that we have. The particular one that I look after is very well received. It's by far the biggest course of a university. A lot of people are obviously interested in coaching and the management side. So across the two campuses, we probably get close to around about 200 students each year coming in on the first year programme. And it's going well. I think the best thing about it is probably just the staff we've got. If you get the right people on board, it just makes a massive difference. We've got some amazing people delivering on the course. If I look at Etihad, for example, we've got people who work at Blackburn Rovers in terms of the academy. We work at Burnley in terms of the academy. Works at Manchester United in the academy. And this particular lad's been there for 10 years with Man United. Plus, we've got people who work within the girls' programme at Man City and Man United. We've got people who've been in coach education with the FA for over 30 years. So the vast amount of experience they bring, but like we always say, that they're still doing it. And I think that's really key for us, that we can go out and we can talk to our students about what we're going to do tomorrow night at training, rather than talk about what we did 10 years ago when it's a little bit out of date. Yeah. So I think it's really important that they're all current and we're all out coaching. So, yeah, I think we've got a really good bunch of people there, and that makes the course for me in terms of the people on it and the students, you know, that they react well off of that. It's great content, of course, but obviously I think the people bring it to life. That's
the key, right, isn't it? It's getting the engagement for the delivery, right? And there's nothing better than like present day scenarios and up to date stuff to really get those students thinking, actually, what I'm you know, what I'm learning is worthwhile, and there's a reason for being here. I appreciate this. Let's not go to, I don't want to get controversial about the FA stuff because that's something you do extra, but obviously there's been a change from level two to the new UEFA C. All straightforward. Is there much difference there between what was the old level two and the new UEFA C?
Main difference is it's reduced a little bit in terms of the face-to-face. We do some more stuff online. But it is interactive. So when we talk about being online, it's not just them watching the presentation of it. It's like myself leading discussions and chats with them in small groups. So it's relevant and it's interactive, which is good. The content's a little bit different just because it is a UEFA C, so we have to obviously fit in with what UEFA want to do now. So obviously it needs to line up with what everyone else is doing if they deliver UEFA C. But obviously the FA can still put their own little twist on it. But I'd say that the main aspect of it is just helping coaches go from being a level one coach or beginning their journey and start to introduce some coaching concepts to them. So how we can support players, what their role is during practices, what practices could look like and how they go about designing it, which is very, very similar to what was happening on a level two. So in terms of it does look different and it does feel different, but at the end of it, the heart of it is very similar. So they are fresh at the moment. I've only delivered one myself at the county that I work with, which is Cheshire FA. So it's still a work in progress. We're still working the best way of delivering it and so forth.
Of course.
But I can honestly say it was well, the people who were on the first course, it was very well received and they got loads out of it. So yeah, it seems to have gone well so far.
I think it's just great to hear it's updated and reviewed regularly because, like, things change, don't they? You know, what was working 3, 4, 5 years ago, it will need to be changed, right? Because it's always evolving, isn't it, in the world of coaching and football and just the kind of the whole way we learn and what the game looks like. So it's great that it's had a revisit. Even though it might have been perfect before, it's always good to review and reflect in it and improve where we can. So great to hear. Well, look, I don't know if anything has changed or not, but my first question would be, then last time we spoke, it was around the theme of rough and tumble play, wasn't it? Which yeah. I was kind of, I think I had been doing this a little bit, not to the level you had covered it, but I thought I was touching on this stuff in my coaching for a couple of years before we spoke. And then you were the first person I heard speak about it, kind of almost highlighting it as a focus in a training session to actually encourage that body combat and that kind of body contact that obviously the players will face in games, but being a bit more proactive in how we approach that in our training sessions. So I'm curious to know, is that something you're still an advocate for? Has your thoughts process changed around that, or has anything evolved over the last couple of years?
No, nothing's changed in terms of my thoughts around it. I'm still a very big advocate for it. The only thing that's probably changed me a little bit differently was at the time I was working in the girls program, and obviously I've moved over to Chester now and moved into the boys program. So I think we talked.
You've got to go the other way. You've got to de-escalate.
Yeah, rather exactly. Than... Yeah, that's exactly. So I think we spoke about that at the time, saying it is probably more towards, not saying you can't do it with boys at all, but we just said traits within girls and boys are a little bit different at a young age, and boys naturally go into that rough and tumble sort of play anyway, whereas girls may not be encouraged to do it or prefer to play in a different way, and they may just need a little bit of encouragement in terms of the environment when we're training. So it's not something that we actually have to encourage as much with the boys. But it's still one of the discussions we had. So I started Chester last, one of the first discussions we had after about 2 months with the under 10s group was just talking about replicating what a match day looks like and making sure training sessions replicate what a match day looked like. And part of that was just the tempo and the ferocity of the game and in terms of the physical challenges that they face within those games. So sometimes the practices that we were putting on weren't replicating what the boys would then face when they came and played in the game. So we needed to make sure we prepared them for what a game looked like in terms of the environment. So for the boys, it was more about maybe just more opposed stuff, more equal number of opposed stuff rather than overloads. So more 1v1s, more 2v2s, and maybe just things like area size, make them a little bit tighter so there's less space for them, so there's more physical contact and less time for them to think about and so forth, just so to make sure we were preparing them for that game day. And that links into that rough and tumble play in terms of it's that closeness and that physical contact that they've got to get used to. So, yeah, huge believer. And like I say, it's just, again, it's like anything in coaching we'll talk about later, I'm sure. It's not a one fit for everything. You've got to look at your environment. And the environment I was in at the time, the girls needed it. And I felt we needed it a lot. It was a big, big need for them. Whereas I've gone into this environment now and it's different. We don't need it as much. So we can reduce it back, but we do need it a little bit.
Well, I'm sure there's coaches out there listening, boys, with the coach, boys or girls, that will have those players in their teams that, you know, maybe that's not their strength, right? You know, they might be very technically gifted players or have other attributes they bring, but maybe the rough and tumble side, the body combat side, isn't there, Kian? What I'm noticing, Carl, and I don't think this is something you'd have seen or not, or you agree, but we've had younger ones from under sixes up to under 11s now, and I've got my older boys team now that are under 14s, and I wasn't involved with them until last season. Right. And the physicality, the game becomes much more physical, I guess I'm saying. Like, it's physical when they're under six and under sevens, but under 14s and 15s, it really is a battle, you know, and you have to earn your right to play. So we've got some wonderfully gifted players that are really good on the ball, but if they're not willing to kind of do the outwork bit and get stuck in, they don't get a chance to show their skills off, and that becomes harder as the age groups go on. That's what I've seen. Is that something that you've seen as well, or is it not a case it's the same the whole way through?
I think, like you just touched on that, I think it's just knowing what your group of players are like, and it's even the environment that they play their football in, so it depends on where they play the games and who they play against and so forth. And but then we could also look at, can we talk about a little bit later on, we've got to prepare them, even if it might not be happening now, we've got to prepare them for what maybe is going to come along in a couple of years or whatever. So especially, I'd say 13, 14, sometimes it's not always that physically competitive. But then I can guarantee once you get a 16, 17, 18 men's game or women's full game, then it will come really physical. So you've got to prepare them for that, and you've got to have an eye on what's coming up and not just what's happening straight in front of you. So I think there's always a time that it's going to be needed. It's just recognising when your players do need it and how you're going to produce it within your environment. So it's just looking at players. It may not be a physical game that they're playing at the moment, but when there will always be an element within a game where that physical part will come into it, and how are they reacting to that physical part? Are they quite happy with it? Do they shy away a little bit from it? Do they prefer not to get involved in it? And it may just be individual players in your group who need a little bit more help towards it.
For sure. Brilliant. Well, that brings us on to really the topic of the podcast today. And it's kind of, I guess, positioned really around player development. You know, we're going to look at maybe how that works over a season and things you might consider when you're looking at your players over a season. But because we're going to look at player development, I think the first really, the good starting point is just to ask you, you know, what player development means to you?
The first thing that obviously comes to mind for me is that it's got to be a long-term approach, and it's got to be beneficial for players as individuals and not as an actual team. So if I look at the first part, first of all, in terms of that long-term approach, the one thing that we can't do, and something I discussed with the coaches a lot, is we can't be reactive to what's happening and then plan sessions in terms of being reactive to what's happening in a game or so. What's really important is you've got to almost at the start of the season, you should be able to plan the whole season in terms of your training at the start of the season. And that doesn't mean you don't necessarily have to plan every single session before the season starts, but you can plan your topics or plan. We have like a curriculum at Chester, so we have a clear curriculum of what we're going to do over the whole period of time. And no matter what happens in any game or anything like that, that curriculum doesn't change. Because at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years of age, it doesn't really matter about games. We've got to think about how they're going to end at the end of their developmental journey. So that developmental journey, again, there could be discussions around when that finishes at 16, 17, 18 years of age, whatever people agree on. But at some stage, that developmental stage will finish. I mean, it's more about first team winning and so forth. So we've really got to think about what is it in terms of you want your players to look like when they come to the end of that developmental journey. So that, therefore, that aim, wherever you start off with, that's got to be your final thoughts in terms of how we're going to get them there and what they're going to look like at the end of this journey. I mean, it's, like I say, it's got to be individuals. We're not trying to produce teams. We're trying to produce players, because at the end of the day, players will come in and out of your teams for whatever reasons. They might move away with family or whatever. They might just go and find another sport. You may get new people wanting to join your team. So you're constantly going to have individuals coming in and out of your team. So first of all, if you get your players right in terms of their development, usually the team looks after itself anyway. So it's looking at what does each individual need within the group and how you're going to support that individual. So things like, I don't know, working on a corner or working on free kicks just isn't player development. There's no need for it. We talk about it at Chester, where I'm at the moment. If we concede from a corner, we say to it, we're not even going to take that as a count that as a goal. We'll all hands up now and say we all concede probably one or two each week from a corner, because we don't work on it in training. So we don't work on how to defend in a corner, or we don't work out how to corner routines, because we just don't see it as important. They can do that when they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years of age. So we're just going to concentrate on everything in terms of what it is to help them make them a better player. And then the final bit is just recognising in terms of it, how to actually develop it and build upon it each season in terms of recognising what we need at the start, and then what we can do next after you've got through that first phase, and what you can do next, and just keep building those blocks on top of it. And then hopefully that final block will be towards the end of the journey, and that's when you get them to be the player, the type of player that you really want them to be when you started 10 years ago or whatever it may be. So again, nutshell, long-term approach, very player-centred. It's all about the players. It's not about the team or you as a coach. And that's the main focus for me.
I love the comments around the corner stuff, you know, like you're going to spend your time focused on things that are important, right? So if we're going to spend half an hour practicing defending a corner or scoring from a corner, that's half an hour we're not doing stuff that actually can make a significant difference. But most importantly about that is the fact that you can see through that when it happens in the game, right? So rather than getting frustrated or annoyed by the fact you conceded the goal, it's like, it doesn't matter. That's on us as coaches. We're not right about that. So let's keep playing our football and do the things that we think are important. What about position specific then? Because this is the thing I'm challenged with now. Again, I think because as the players get a bit older, you start thinking about, okay, you know, when do we talk about being really good at a job on a pitch individually? So, you know, we've kind of created a lot, I'll say, generalists at our under 11s team. You ask them now where they play, they wouldn't be able to say where they play still in the most part. They kind of all do everything, which is fantastic. It's nice to coach that way because the players just play and we encourage everything. Obviously, the older boys, the under 14s that we've got now, it is more position. We've got centre backs and we've got left wingers and we've got a new player that's coming. It's only played up front, you know. So what's your take on that? Is it something as part of that learning, that player development? And if so, what age would you kind of consider maybe position specific coaching?
Yeah. For me, you can't predict where they're going to play. And I have a huge thing on that. It's just impossible to know at any young age of 8, 9, 10 years of age where they're going to be in 10 years time in terms of their final playing position. It's impossible. And I use the best example I can use without say naming names, and this has got nothing to do with my coaching, by the way, either. I've had contact and I've had coaching time with two current England international players in the women's side who are both goalkeepers. Now, one of them, when I was coaching them, hadn't even been in goal once at that stage. And by the time I finished coaching with her, because I moved on, she was still an outfield player. And she just happened to go in goal one day, did really well, carried on doing it, bits about exploring. Now she's in the current England squad as we speak. So she's there. Another one who, again, recently in the current England squad, was a goalkeeper when I had contact time with her. Again, nothing to do with me. But at the same time, she was playing county football. And when she played county football, she was a striker. So it was just at that time, it just goes to show that they've both played outfield. They've both played different positions. And they've ended up both being goalkeepers. So if we'd have pigeonholed those girls at that time in terms of not allowing them to go and explore and experiment and do different things, A, they may not have made goalkeeper. I'm sure they would, but you could argue, would they have actually gone on to make and been a professional footballer and gone on to international standard? Again, you don't know. You just don't know. But the key thing about it is, in terms of, you've got to go and let them explore and try different things out. But at the same time, I think it can also, you have to be a little bit careful with it, because it can, I think, impact development a little bit if you just keep chucking about in different positions and so forth. So the way we look at that at the moment is, when they're playing seven-a-side football, we basically say to them, you've got to play every single position. Because at small-numbered football, I don't think there's really positions anyway. I think if we've got the ball, we're attacking. And if we haven't got the ball, we're all defending. So you shouldn't really be a defender or a midfielder or an attacker. You might have a little bit of structure just to help the team in terms of what it looks like. But you should all be doing every single job anyway. So at five-a-side or seven-a-side, they can just go play anywhere anyway. It doesn't really matter too much. Nine-a-side, because it comes a little bit more tactical and a little bit more structured, we try and say, look, let's try and put them in three or four different positions. But we need to be careful when and how we do that, in terms of, we start moving around in games too much, it does affect them, and it is hard in their development in terms of recognising what we need to do in that position and what to do in that one. But at the same time, they do need to experiment. And then once they get up to 11-a-side, we usually just say, let's just sort of concentrate now maybe on two different positions. So it's looking like you might go and play up front, but it's also looking like you're quite good in those attacking midfield areas, or you're quite good in the wide areas, or you can play fullback and play in a wide area as well, whether it may be. But then we're just again, pulling it in a little bit as they head towards the end of their coaching journey. Just so, again, like you mentioned, we can start getting a bit more specific information around the position that they're playing. But, again, we don't want to pigeonhole them, and you're only ever going to go and play centre-back even at 13 years of age. I think there's still time in terms of them developing and understanding and exploring and recognising which position they can actually play.
Perfect, great answer. So you're refining a little bit as they work for the age groups, I guess they're just putting it in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. And Colin, so okay, sold on it. We all think it's important player development. Obviously, long term is the key message here, and looking at the individual rather than the team. Fantastic. And actually not thinking too much about positions until they kind of start working those age groups and refine that as they go along. As a coach, then, if I wanted to embrace this and start looking at my team more individually than collectively, and I think as grassroots coaches, we often look at the team as a collective because we're limited for time, and maybe also just our skill sets. I know for me, you know, it's not as easy looking at the individuals. Any tips or suggestions about how we could go about establishing like a player development program for our team? The individuals in our team, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think again, you've got to look at it in terms of, if you can, it's not easy. If you can, try and plan it before the season starts, like I mentioned before. And then try and look at it in terms of, I also try and look at it like as if they're at school, in terms of like a curriculum at school. So if you look at them dead basic in terms of maths, they go through maths, they do a little bit around addition, then they go and do a little bit around subtraction and multiplication and so forth. So there's four or five key bits to maths, and they look over them throughout the whole year at a young age. So where we're at the moment, I've introduced a six-week curriculum, and then we break that curriculum down. So there's a six-week cycle that they go through, and then after the 6 weeks, it starts again. So for us, because this is what we want them to work on, we have a build-up week, so how to obviously build up attacks. So that might be first third of the pitch and in the middle third of the pitch. Then we do a creative week, so i.e. the finishing part of it in terms of how we might score goals and so forth. We do a out-of-possession week, and then we do 2 weeks of transition. So 1 week on having just won the ball, and then 1 week having just lost the ball. And then the final week, the 6 weeks, we have a free week. So that's then for the coaches to go, do you know what? I just need to go and revisit this one a little bit more. because that's what most players within the group probably need a little bit more work on. So that 3 week is going to be clear. It's not where you go, let's go do corners and free kicks again. You go revisit.
You go watch all the coaches out there doing their heading practice and defending set pieces. No.
So yeah, it's quite, they have to go and visit one of the previous 5 weeks so they can do that, but they get to choose that. And then within each one, they have topics that we cover within that curriculum. So if we go build up for that first week, there's a list of topics that they can go and look at. So one might be receiving to play forward, one might be forward passing. But most of it, nearly everyone will have 1v1s in it, because even in build up, you're going to come in a 1v1 situation, especially in the modern game of football. So, and then in creativity, there's combination play or finishing or whatever it may be and so forth. So again, the coaches, we're not saying this is, you've got to do running with the ball this week. And so they get to choose which one you want to do. We just say to them, just try and cover each topic throughout the whole season. So if you can get that and you just keep to that cycle all the time, what it will ensure is then that the players will cover nearly every single topic that you want them to throughout the season. So again, it's not being reactive to it and saying, oh, you really need to work on the passing. At the end of the day, they need to work on the passing, but they're also going to need to work on the dribbling. They're also going to need to work on the turning. They're also going to need to work running with the ball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got to allow them to have the same amount of time on each topic. But like I said, there needs to be some flexibility, and that's why we have that 3 week within it. So it takes a little bit of planning. But again, I think we'll talk about at the end, if people want to get in contact with me, I'll let them know if they want a little bit of hand with that. And I can send over some stuff that we've produced, and they can, if they want to use it, and just don't have to replicate it, obviously, but if they want to take ideas away from it, more than happy to share and how we've done that. But it's all in the planning. So once you've done that, it usually then just runs itself. It's just a matter of remembering that we forget sometimes which week we're on. We'll always get a coach texting going, we're on build-up or we're on creativity. And I'm like, I don't know myself. I need to go check the last week and see what we did there. Yeah. So once you get that out of the way, then it's absolutely fine, yeah. But that'd be it. I think that's the key bits within it then is, because again, we've put ours how we want our players to play. Now, other teams and other coaches might want to play in a slightly different way. And that's part of football. Obviously, that's the exciting bit about it. We all have different opinions. So what those topics are can be completely different. But obviously, again, the key bit I would say is when you start off 8, 9, 10 years of age, I wouldn't have thought the topics would be that different.
Yeah.
Because it's the basis of what every kid needs to learn in terms of loads of dribbling, loads of contact time the ball, loads of receiving under pressure, that type of stuff. As they get older, 13, 14, 15, then you might want us, we're going to play this. Your content obviously replicates how you want the team to play a little bit more.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Perfect. And how many sessions a week was it? Is that one session a week or do you have more than one a week?
We're lucky. So we have 3 contact times a week. Sometimes one of them is a game. So we'll have usually a minimum of 2 contact times a week. So therefore, that we can do that week period. And ours are 90-minute sessions. So it might be if you only get an hour a week, you may then do a double one. So you might do build up for 2 weeks. Right, because if not, 1 week of build up might not be enough, or 1 hour build up. So you might want to do it over even a block of 3 weeks. You might want to do build up for 3 weeks, then do 3 weeks of creativity and so forth. Again, you've got to look at the environment you're in and what you've got available to you and replicate or put into place what's going to work best for your players and for you as a coach as well, obviously.
Exactly. What a great framework. And that was my point. I think if you touch one of these things for an hour a week, it may not be enough to see something. And I don't think this is something again I get more confidence as a coach. Like repeating a session hasn't got to be identical, but like repeating the theme and some of the practices actually by the second week, it's amazing how much more you get out of it because the players understand the practice, they get in it straight away a little bit more, and you kind of build on the previous week's kind of end point, if you like. So I think if I had if I was throwing this and had the players once a week, I would certainly probably look to do it double up maybe and have at least 2 weeks out of it. You might have lost the player for a week and they're back in kind of thing, so it gives that as well. So but what a great framework. You may have mentioned in the topics, but just in case there's something more around this that you're happy to share with us. One thing we always get asked from coaches when I'm doing the podcast is, now talk more about practices. What do they actually do? You know, where are the cones going to go and what's the actual games that you play? So without giving all the secrets away, is there kind of any kind of practices that you would definitely include in player development or at least themes around that, whether it's 1v1 staff or, like you say, possession based with regards to receiving and passing? Is there some core themes that you think actually as part of player development, these practices should probably really be in there?
I think the key thing for we had a meeting with the players last week, going through our expectations. And one of the themes was what type of practices we're going to provide for you. So we have an essential and desirable list in terms of essentials. This has got to happen within the practices for coaches. And then we have a desirable list in terms of, and most of these should occur as well. So it goes without saying about fun and so forth. But one of the key things that we want, and I've talked about it before, is opposed practices. Now, I'm not saying unopposed practices are no good. I'm not saying that whatsoever. The reason behind our thought process is we've got players, so we've got more than one. So we've got 12 of you. So what's the point of us doing unopposed stuff? Because you've got a mate there that you could be playing against. A, it's more fun for you because that's why you're here, because everyone likes to play football because it's competitive. That's why people play it. You know, it's a game. You want to go and compete against people. So let's make it competitive. It gets it closer to the game and so forth. It's just, again, just it brings up the tempo. It just brings up realism and so forth. So there's loads of things around it. But obviously, there's loads of things that you can do on a pose as well, which are beneficial. But what we say to the players is we can do that at home. So that's the stuff that you can do at home. You can go spend 20 minutes in your garden. You can go and pass a ball against a wall, or you can go do some dribbling in an area or in an area with cones and going all that type of stuff. But what you can't do is do the opposed stuff because you might not have a mate with you. So therefore, let's do the stuff that we can definitely do with you. So that's opposed. And you go do the stuff that you can definitely do at home in your own time. So that's the thought process behind that. And then other stuff, it's just without going too simplistic with it, it's just making sure certain things happen. Like it's got to be challenging for them, because if you want play, because the key word we keep talking about is development. So they ain't going to develop if the practices aren't challenging, because if the practices aren't challenging, it's too easy. They're just going to stay at the same level that they're at. So it's got to be hard for them, but at the same time, it's got to be achievable, because if it's not achievable, they'll just lose motivation and so forth. So key things around tasks. So what the tasks are you setting? Is the task achievable within the practice? Is the area size relevant for what we're doing and so forth? So a big one for me that I've spoken to coaches about quite a few times from when I put my FA hat on, if we're doing like a pressing practice, your area size is key, because if it's too small and they're actually getting success out of pressing just because of the area size, it's got nothing to do with how they're pressing or how the technique they're using or the decision-making that's going through them at the time. They're winning it because the area size is small and the other team's just finding it hard to keep hold of the ball. But at the same time, if it's too big, they're just going to lose motivation because there's no way they can actually press the areas. The spaces are just too big. So things like just basic key things around area size are really important. So massive advice for me with coaches is put a practice on it and just watch it. And just have a look what is actually happening and why is it happening. So they are winning the ball back, but why are they winning the ball back? Are they winning it because they're pressing really well as a unit, or are they winning it back because the other team can't keep hold of it? So, and then once you've done that and recognised exactly what's happening in front of you, then you might need just to make some changes. So change the area size and so forth. So just things like that are really important for us. I like to try and get direction as much as I can. I think, again, it's an invasion game, football. So the whole purpose is getting from your end to the opposition end, just like every other invasion game. So you've got to progress. So it's something that the FA are doing with their UEFA C course as well. And something they introduced as well that I started to take from as well is, can we get goalkeepers involved as much as possible as goalkeepers? So when we have a 1v1 practice, instead of a goalkeeper getting involved in the 1v1 practice, can you have one 1v1 practice where at the end of it, after you get past your defender, you have a shot on goal rather than the goalkeeper doing the 1v1s and so forth. So again, think about and include the goalkeepers as much as you possibly can within your practices. So just tiny things like that. Again, if people are getting in contact with me, I'm happy to share a little, again, what our essential and desirables are in terms of practices. Again, they don't have to use it, but they might get some ideas from it. Happy to share that as well.
And Carl, a lot of the coaches that listen to the podcast are grassroots coaches like myself and part-time, and you know, we've got full-time jobs and time's a strain. Realistically, do you think can coaches, grassroots coaches, adopt kind of player development for their players individually? Is it something they can do, or is it just too much work involved in it?
I think they absolutely can in terms of individual, because once you've got these practices up and running, and once you get the practice side correct in terms of the topic and the setup, it then allows you then to go and actually work with the players. Because once the practice is up and running, especially if it's, I find, especially if it's opposed stuff, whether it's small number or high numbers, you can then go and work with individual players quite easily without affecting the rest of the group. So if it's, for example, if it's a small number practice and it's 1v1, hopefully you can go and work with the two players in one 1v1 while the rest of it are carried on and playing. If it's a high number practice, so I don't know, a 6v4 overload practice, taking one player out of that practice and have a little bit of support with them won't affect the rest of the players. You can still play 6v3 or 5v4. So I think once you get the practices right and they're up and running and you're happy with them, it's having the confidence then just to go in and speak to players as an individual. So again, it's that observational skills, recognising what they need help with around the topic. So if we look at receiving to play forward that we touched on a little bit, is it the checking of the shoulder to make sure they're in the space? Is it their body position in terms of opening the body up? Is it receiving using the back foot because they want to keep using the right and they're not happy using the left? Whatever it may be, identifying what it is they need a little bit of help with, going in, checking and making sure with them that they understand what it is they should be doing. So a bit of Q&A. And then a massive thing for me that we forget to do quite a lot is then to check learning afterwards. So we might go to Johnny or Julie, just remember to check your shoulder next time before you receive the ball. We let them go back in the practice, but then we go off and go look at somebody else and we don't know whether they're actually doing it now or not. So they either need praise then to say, you've done it, fantastic, well done, just saw you check your shoulder, brilliant, keep doing it. Or they might need a gentle reminder. So again, John, Julie, what did we just speak about? What do you need to do? Check my shoulder, right, off you go, watch, brilliant, fantastic, and I can go look at another player. So it's a little bit of a process, it's confidence, it's a lot of it's about confidence as a coach, because it's difficult to go and step in and do that, but I think it's definitely achievable in terms of, again, we've all got knowledge around the game, and that's why we're coaches. You know, obviously, some people have more knowledge, and that's why they're in the Premier League, etc. But we have basic knowledge about how to do certain stuff within the game, and it's just helping the players, and instead of just maybe just speaking to the group all the time and recognise what specific part of the practice or topic they need help with.
And one thing that coaches often have is maybe some support with regards to like an assistant coach or a co-coach. How key can that be with regards to player development, and how might they work together as coaches to support individual player development?
Yeah, it's something else we're lucky at Chester. So we've got two, sometimes three coaches per age group, and I've a real emphasis on this season about utilising that second coach or that third coach. So for me, the first coach or the main coach runs the practice, so sets it up and runs it. And then the second coach, they can have a different way. There's different ways in which they can actually then go and support it. So for instance, they might be going around and pulling individual players out and helping them. They might be, what we say, is managing or coaching against the topic. So if we're coaching and progressive passing or penetration, when the other team's out of possession, we might be helping them to stay a little bit more compact and structured to make it hard for that penetrative pass. So we can go and coach against the topic, which then makes it more challenging for the opposition team. We might put on individual smaller practices. So if we're doing if the main coach practice doing that squad practice is 6v4, the assistant coach or the other coach, whatever you want to call them, might have a 1v1 practice alongside it. So every 5-10 minutes, two players come out of the main practice and come into that little practice, the 1v1, and they run that, which is linked into the main topic. Because again, if we talk about player development, the smaller the number of the practice, so i.e. 1v1s, 2v2s, the more emphasis there is on individual players. You can go and hide a little bit in a 6v4 or an 8v6, whatever it is. You put in a 1v1 or a 2v2, there's no hiding. So they have to, you know, it's challenging for them and it's difficult for them, but that's, again, how we develop. So again, we're trying to introduce that at the moment in terms of those small 1v1 practices next to the main practice in terms of that. So, loads of ways. If you're lucky to have a second coach or a third coach, even 100%, think about, again, it goes into that planning. So the key bit is that communication between the coaches. If I'm the main coach or I'm leading that week, this is what I want to get out of the topic. I want them to be able to do this. So if you ever go and speak to a player, that's the key messages that we just need to keep getting across to them. Because if not, you might be getting a little bit of conflictive information about what I'm trying to get across. And then it gets them all confused, doesn't it? So, but yeah, 100%, they can definitely be used.
One of the things on that I think is really good that we've started doing more recently as a group of coaches is we kind of always have a conversation around whoever's leading the sessions, like, what does great look like for us today? So what will great look like? We might necessarily always agree what great looks like, but that doesn't matter. The important thing is that the lead coach is looking for that. So then we know how to support. We can have a conversation before the session, so we're on the same page, and we tend to agree, and we get there in the end. But it just means that actually my version of great isn't different to what the other coach's version of great is. So we're recognized in the same thing. So I think having that picture, that definitely helps. How would you measure success then, or so I say development in the players, and how often would you measure it? Is it something you revisit every 6 weeks as part of the curriculum, or do you look over a longer time, and is there a metric, or is it literally just a visual thing? Are the players getting it, and is it playing out in practice?
I think the first thing we should all measure, whether it's whatever we're doing in terms of development and so forth, is are they coming and enjoying the sessions, and are they wanting to stay? Because I think if that's not happening, then you've got to look at yourselves and what we're doing wrong here, because they're not coming to it, they're not enjoying it, they're actually looking to go elsewhere and play football elsewhere or go and play another sport. So the key thing is, first of all, are they enjoying it and are they staying? I think it's very, very difficult, because it's one of them we've been talking about helping players reach their potential, but we don't really ever know what that potential is.
Yeah, because exactly.
It's impossible. You don't know how good a player could be. I think we just, as I say to the coaches, as long as we're seeing there's improvement from over a certain period of time, so probably it's going to take a few months, but I would say over 2-3 months. So once we've gone through that cycle, probably 3 or 4 times, or probably 2 or 3 times, that there's got to be some sort of improvement in aspects of their game. And again, it can't be around everything.
Yeah.
And it can't be massive, but if an individual player is now checking their shoulder a lot more than they were previously, then that's success. If they've got the confidence at least to dribble and take on players, they don't necessarily have to beat them, but if they're actually doing it again now, whereas before they just wanted to pass the ball on all the time, but now they're actually having the confidence to go and dribble, that's a massive improvement, and that's a massive tick. What we do is over probably 3 times a season, we do individual development plans for the players. So we do give them 3 super strengths that we think they're really good at. And then we give them 3 areas that we think are the main focus for them to develop. So what we can do after 2-3 months, again, we can review that and say, well, these are the 3 areas that we really wanted you to develop on. Have you improved on them? Are you better at them? Are you still the same, or is it maybe gone backwards, on what's the reason? So again, we can measure that a little bit in terms of keeping a track of what we want to work on and whether that's actually helped or not. But again, it might just be because you just need to be careful, because they're kids at the end of the day, and they're all going through different things. So we spoke about a player yesterday at training. We spoke about how they weren't developing as quickly as we thought they would. But then after a month or two, they just shot up again and just started flying again. So you don't know what was happening in that month. They might have just been having a bad time at school. They might be going through a little bit of growing. So the body's not quite understanding itself in terms of what you're asking it to do and so forth. Or they might have been playing just tired. It's difficult. That's why I just don't think after 2-3 months you can really say there should be some development, because you just don't know what's happening.
So true.
By the end of the season, you should see something 100%. And I think if that may be when, and again, the first person we always say to look at is you as a coach. So don't look at a player first of all. If it's not gone as well as we hoped, look at yourself first of all. Have we done everything that we can in terms of, have we put on the right type of practices? Have we helped them enough during the sessions and so forth? And that's the first place to visit for me.
I remember having a player, I think it was under 7 or under 8, so a young lad, and he was one of our best players in the sense of work hard, great attitude. And almost for a whole year, his game just went backwards for a whole year. And, you know, it was just strange, but it was almost the whole season. But then the following season, he was back being that one of our best players again, you know, and you could have easily made a knee-jerk reaction and you know, we have a streaming system here, so move the player around, whatever else. But, you know, something didn't feel quite right, in the sense that there was nothing he wasn't doing right. It just wasn't happening for him. And there was just things almost beyond control. So, and that, like I said, that can be a couple of weeks, it might be a month, but it can be longer than that, and just being patient, right? It's long term for a reason, isn't it? Long term isn't days and weeks, it's months and years. So brilliant. Well, look, Cole, the reason for getting you on the podcast to discover this key topic was not just because your expertise over the last 18 years and everything that you've done around it, but also because the book that you've put out, which I'd seen you tweet about, and I've not read it, but I'm getting it, but I it looks interesting. Can you tell us a bit about that? You know, sell it to us a little bit, and what we would get from it when we buy it.
Yeah, it's funny. We've sort of come across the topics what the book's about without really realizing it within the podcast. So there's things you're saying, I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting, because that's what the sort of the book's about. So basically, first of all, the main thing it identifies, and again, people don't have to take this as written, they can choose bits of it or not. I've come up with 15 topics that I think are essential within player development that all players should look at in terms of topics that they need to get better at in terms of their development as footballers. So basic stuff around short passing, we do forward passing, there's stuff out of possessions we talk about, the counter press, so how they react after they've just lost the ball and so forth. So cover and support in 2v2 and 3v defend, that type of stuff. There's 15 topics, first of all, that I look at, and there's a brief outline of why I think they're important in terms of development within footballers. But the main point of the book is to put forward the idea of we don't have to keep changing practices constantly, and we don't have to keep coming up with these amazing ideas for the players every single week. There's a real positive process in putting on the same kind of practices each week that they enjoy, because as you mentioned before, if you put them in the same environment, we don't have to then work out what it is they're doing. They don't have to work out what the actual practice is. They can just go in and play the practice. So we look at things like, so again, a little bit of support behind the process. The idea is if you look at certain environments where they go and repeat the same thing constantly, they actually like doing that. So, for instance, the game of football itself is the same environment each week, near enough, the same concept of it. The other one is computer games. They go off and play the same computer game time and time again because they like it. What happens is the challenge usually gets a little bit more difficult for them, and therefore that's why they enjoy it. So I've come up with 10 core practices that I think are all gamey based, they're all opposed and so forth. And then alongside those 10 core practices, I just change it ever so slightly to introduce a different topic. So you could use the practice 1 week for forward passing. And then the following week, do the same practice, just tweak it by changing the position of a cone or position of a player, and then it turns into running with the ball. So the way we've used it before, we did it again. This is something I introduced when I was at Manchester City. We named the practices after players. So it was obviously we named them after Man City players at the time. So it was like a Lauren Hemp practice, for instance. So we just tell the girls, go play Lauren Hemp. So they'd run in and play the Lauren Hemp practice. And then while we were playing it, we just moved some cones around or brought a goal in and said, right, all you're going to do now is you're doing exactly the same, but when this happens, you've now got to go and do this. So they didn't even know what was happening, but all of a sudden they were then working on forward passing, or they were working on finishing. And what it enabled them to do was just, we had them for 60 minutes. They weren't wasting 10 minutes each week, getting used to the practice, or us trying to explain what they actually have to do in the practice. We just went in, we just told them what it was, and they were playing within 10 seconds of them arriving to training. And then, like I say, as they were playing, we just introduced it. So the idea is just to have these 10 core practices. And if people wanted to, they could actually just use these 10 practices for the whole season. So they could just buy that, because each one has 9 adaptations. So there's actually 100 practices in the book. So there's the core practice and 9 slight changes to it, that then it gives you 10 for each one. Or they could just use it alongside a normal training session, so they could introduce a couple of them within their training and also have their own ones that they like to have themselves. Or they might even come up with their own core practice, which would be amazing, and they come up with their own adaptations. The idea is that you don't have to have amazing, complex practices. Just put them in something that they enjoy, and that he'd recognise, and we know what we're doing in, and then you can concentrate on the actual coaching side. And then alongside it, then obviously I'll put down, so if it's running with the ball, I'll put down the coaching points of what they should be doing, how the practice influences them to run with the ball, and then what you should be looking at as a coach to support the players who are in the practice.
God, it sounds awesome. And again, with the podcast, I'm quite selfish. I always pick up things that relate to me at the moment in time. So, and this was one of those. When I saw you tweet about it, I was like, this is exactly what I need. We put a curriculum together, which is a bit different, sure. So it's over 6 weeks. We have 4 weeks. For the first week, we do dominating one-on-one with the ball. So just don't with them. Then second week is dominating without the ball. So how do we get it back? Yep. Third week, we call it playing clever together with the ball. So as a team, how do we work together with the ball? And then fourth week is playing clever together when the other team's got the ball. So how do we press, things like that? And like you say, we have those four themes. Then week five and six is what we call games weeks, where we try and put it all together. So a bit similar to what you've done, but a little bit different. We have the players once a week. And what I found is by doing it, and we did it the whole of last season, repeated this, and the players seemed to really enjoy it. And we just made up some games around it that shone a light on some of these things. But I was trying to think each week of another game to play, a different one, but the boys loved the one from before. So we've just stayed with it. And if you, I created a new game and the boys were saying, we want to play Skills Pay the Bills or whatever else. And they stick, and you didn't have to do it, reinvent the wheel again. And the level goes up so much more and you get more game time because the players just get straight into the session. But the point about your book I want to make is literally what I didn't have really some of that detail around some of these practices or some other ideas. So with your book, what I think I can do is take these practices and almost put those in where they fit in one of those 4 weeks to really give me some extra kind of ideas, but also some of those coaching points as well that isn't my strength around how we bring it out of the players to move it on another level. Because we did it for the whole of last season, I want it to feel a bit different this season, and I think your book can really be a useful tool for that. I know you're going to say yes anyway, but am I right in thinking that?
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, I think the way I've written it or wrote it, sorry, in terms of, and I'm hoping it's the way. You can take it however you want to take it. So, for instance, that particular case, you can do what you just said there absolutely with it. Or some people might just take it and just go, I'm going to do my whole thing. I don't need to do any more planning for the season. Because, again, some of us as coaches are volunteers and we haven't got time to do it all. And we're running around trying to find practices and we just don't know how to do it. Or have the time to do it, sorry. But others might go, I just like that particular practice and I like that one and I'm going to use those ones, but I don't really want to use that one, which, again, it's absolutely fine. I'm not saying this, you've got to use them all or anything like that or follow that process. But I'd like to think there's probably something for most coaches within it, and in terms of, even it just gives them an idea in terms of, like I say, because most of all the practices are opposed and most of them are very related to the games and most of them are very much directional. Most of them, you have opposition. Most of them are match to match. So it's a lot of 1v1s, 2v2s, 4v4s, that type of stuff. And then there's also different types in there. So as we mentioned before, there's low number practices. So the 1v1s, squad practices, we like to call them, where it's the whole, all players in the one practice. And then there's game practices at the end, which are basically games with just some restrictions around it. So again, I'm hoping, and like I say, I like to think that there's something for everyone. And it's just, again, it's like I say with any CPD event, you can just take one or two things from it that are good for you, that helps you, then it's well worthwhile. So hopefully if you get the book, there'll be at least a couple of things out of it that they'll definitely take away from it. If not,
I'm sure. I'm sure there will be. And age and ability. I mean, again, you know, we often talk to coaches that kind of work with strong players and therefore they kind of have, you know, they see it through that lens, you know, but we don't all work with strong players and we can have quite a wide range of players' ability. Would the book work for all types of ages and abilities?
Yeah. So again, each practice will come along with like four or five different progressions. So again, they don't have to be in progressions. For some people, they may be the starting points. So a progression might actually be the starting point. You can introduce that straight away. Whereas for other people or other players, you may need to start off with where it is at the moment. There's some regressions in there as well. So it might even make the practice it's simpler for the players. So for some players or group squads, you might even need to take it back. And again, I think with the key message again, with especially the lower number of practices, the 1v1s, the 2v2s, and I've talked about this a lot in my first book, you don't have to set up the same exact practice for each set of players. So if you're doing a 1v1, one 1v1 might be in a smaller area compared to the other one. Yeah. Or it might be the starting position of the defender is closer on one practice than it is on the other, because those players need a little bit more challenge with the dribbling. So the defender needs to be closer and the area size needs to be smaller. Again, we don't have to tell the players this. They won't even notice, but the small detail in those changes it will then help that individual development again. So again, that can happen with a lot of the practices in this book as well.
That's such a good point you make about actually you can almost have the same things going on, but just make some small tweaks that are then your back to that individual player development, where actually what that player needs stimulates that player. So therefore do the same practice. And they don't, like you said, they don't even necessarily know, but you're going to see the benefits in the way they develop their game. So awesome. What's the book called and where's the best place to get it?
Yeah, so it's Essential Practices for Player Development. And then as usual, it's on Amazon, but other bookstores as well online. So people like W.H. Smith will do it, and Book Depository, people like that, will on Waterstones, those type of places as well. But yeah, mainly Amazon, most people go to.
Well, look, Cole, perfect. Thanks so much. Well done for getting the book out again. It's your second book, right? I got the first one. This is the second one. I think I know it'd be fantastic. I know these aren't easy things to put together, especially when you're busy doing everything else you do. So well done. We'll put the link in the show notes. If people want to find it quite easy, just click on the show notes and you'll see the link in there so you can get it. It'll probably be the Amazon link, but whatever. We'll put it in there so people can find it. Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. But I can't let you go. Do you want to ask a couple more questions, if that's all right? I guess second to last, just how do you see kind of player development evolve maybe over the next 5 or 10 years? Do you see there been any drastic changes, or are we kind of on a path that's kind of set on course as it's going to stay pretty much as it is?
Yeah, I think the only one for me, I think we overcomplicate coaching sometimes. We overcomplicate the game of football itself sometimes. It can be quite simplistic. Usually what makes it complicated is the individuals within it, so whether the coach or the players, and that's the difficult. And I think that has changed over the last few years. We realise now the importance of the psychological and social side of it, and I think that's changed massively, and rightly so. I think the only thing I'm starting to see a little bit is maybe play development carrying on a little bit longer in individual play development. So we talked before about 16, 18-year-olds, they might come to the end of a journey now, and it's more about the team. But I think there's definitely probably going to be more around individual development, even when you're 22, 23. Right. So maybe specific coaching in terms of for strikers and so forth. I think they started to come in with the big clubs over here, where you've got, obviously you've got goalkeeper-specific training, but I think it might start going a little bit more striker, midfield, defensive, individual coaching, a little bit more like American football. I think that's a possibility. But again, it's one of them. I don't think we should try and change too much in terms of it. It's, for me, it's just if you're a good person, then usually you're a good coach. If your heart's in the right place and so forth, then it usually works out all right.
Awesome. Brilliant, Cole. And final question. I can't remember your answers to this one last time, so you can cheat and probably say the same one if you want to, but or you might have a new one. I don't know. Well, you might not remember the last one you said before either, but we ask all our guests, if there was one thing they could change about the world of coaching, what would that be?
I think at the moment, just over the last few years and what I've seen and just the environment I'm in now, definitely, I think just more support for coaches. I think especially in the grassroots environment, the amount of time that people put into it, the amount of effort it takes, and sometimes the challenges they face, I think there needs to be a lot more support if we can, in terms of helping these people, not necessarily just with resources, but just mentoring, time, just actually sit and speak to someone and have a chat with someone, I think can be a massive help. So I think anything like that, I think that'd be a massive plus.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Kyle. You can't get too much of that, can you? Any sport's always welcome, you know. I think we've improved. I've said it time and time again. I think over the last 5 or 10 years, what I've noticed tangibly is there's been a massive improvement in the way that players are coached. I think from grassroots coaches, I think that's got a lot better. You know, I think coaches tend to understand about maybe taking a more games-based approach and thinking about the players' interests and stuff. What I haven't seen improve dramatically in some ways, I think it's got worse, is the match day experience. I think that is kind of, you know, is an issue. I think COVID has its parts of play in that. I think that's, for some reason, it hasn't come back all pleasant. It's come back almost more ramped up and more anxious, which is a bit of a shame, but it'd be great to get support and that for all of us. Like, I mean, not about necessarily having what's right and what's wrong, but just having conversations around that and asking the right questions and at least agreeing on the questions that need to be asked if you don't agree on the answers, you know. So Cole, thank you so much. Awesome again. Much appreciated. I'm sure listeners will get loads out of the conversation. It's loads out of the book as well. If they want to find out more about you, your work, or reach out to you, is that possible? And if so, what's the best way of going about it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, more than happy for people to reach out. So I'm on LinkedIn, so Carl Wild on LinkedIn, or Twitter is probably the best place. So it's at CarlWild75. So as I mentioned before, if anyone wants to message me on there, just direct message me if you want to look at some of the resources that are produced for Chester in terms of that training curriculum and so forth. More than happy to share bits and bobs of it. Not a problem at all.
Top man, we'll put those links in the show notes so us people can find you nice and easy. So you're going to get hounded now, look, because you're not busy enough. And your plans, anything drastic, or is it just business as normal for the next few months?
Definitely business as normal. Yeah, so obviously just 2 books in 2 years was quite challenging. So I'm not doing a third one. Yeah, I might just have a bit of a rest. So yeah, fully concentrating on Chester, UCFB, and the FA part as well, because obviously especially the FA, the C license being new. Need to get my head around that a little bit more and supporting the students and supporting the players and coaches at Chester as well. So, yeah, fully focused on them.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much again. Best luck to you. Best luck to everyone at Chester and the university as well. And will you come back on again and do a third at some point?
Oh, absolutely.
We won't wait for the next book, though. We'll have to get in before the next book comes out. Yeah, brilliant. Top man. All right. Thanks, Cole.
Cheers, Scott. Thanks a lot, mate.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.